And a very pleasant good morning. This is live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter Abell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. Want you to know that you can ask questions throughout this program. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y. Ellis@leg.wa.gov or call the station 509-826-0100. That's 509-826-0100. And it's been a busy week for these legislators. We had the inauguration of a brand new governor this week. Of course, representatives Engel and Abell are brand new, so they're learning the ropes around here. But why don't we start with you, Senator Short? You know, new governor, kind of a new start. What did you make of his inaugural speech?
Well, it was pretty mind-blowing. He talked in a very bipartisan tone. He talked about needing to reform state government, to really look at state programs and really look at them and determine where we can reduce those funds. I mean, he didn't say he wouldn't do taxes, but he said certainly those are not going to be the first thing. And just really signaling his tone was so much different than the day before with outgoing Governor Inslee. It was pretty dramatically different. And look, I want to give him a chance. I hope his actions follow, what the things that he shared. And I'm hopeful. It really reminds us that having 12 years of the former governor, and then having this new person come in with just such a different tone, it was pretty dramatically different and really encouraging.
Representative Abell, what did you think?
Yeah, I'll echo Senator Short's comments. I think tone really matters. I think the new governor obviously made an effort to have a different tone from his predecessor. I think it was refreshing in the chamber from what I could see among the response, certainly among the Republicans on our side of the aisle. As Senator Short alluded to, I think, the proof will be in the pudding. It's kind of the old line from Ronald Reagan, trust but verify. I really want to see what this looks like in the coming weeks and months as the session unfolds. But I think it was a promising first start. We're going to take him at his word that he says he wants to work with us, and so we'll see what that looks like.
Do you agree, Representative Engel?
I absolutely do. Senator Short and Representative Abell did a great summary there, and I also felt some encouragement and hope after the last 12 years of a different tone that perhaps we're entering a phase where we can actually get something done and work for all the people.
Before, and you mentioned it, Senator Short, Governor, now former Governor Inslee, gave his speech as well. Did you feel like that the speech almost encapsulated the 12 years in a sense? Did you feel like it was a little bit partisan and maybe, I don't know, maybe again, gave people a general idea of what his attitude really has been the past 12 years?
Oh, without a doubt. It was overtly partisan in every way and also taken shots at the incoming President Trump. And really, he's someone who really his administration's typified by, pushing the envelope and pushing buttons that aren't necessary. Look, we all have our personal opinions. Our district folks have their opinions as well. But we're also called where we can to work together and to strategize and roll up our sleeves and get things done. And it doesn't matter who gets the credit, but he just never had that ability in the 12 years of just sitting down and working across the aisle. And really, even within his own caucus. So it dramatically different. In fact, when he left, he exited the chamber alone, like he just went walking up the aisle, and all of a sudden we went like, "Where's the governor?" And he was gone. So it just really strange.
Representatives Abell and Engel, this is your first time hearing one of these things live, in the chamber. What was your response to former Governor Inslee?
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, it felt like a graceless farewell address by the governor. You know, I've only ever had very limited interactions with him, but I guess I'd hoped for more, but was prepared for something along the lines of what we received. I think it was interesting Senator Short mentioned that the governor kind of just up and left the chamber. Representative Engel had a role. Do you want to fill in a little bit about what your role was going to be?
Yeah, Senator Short and I were the Republicans assigned to escort Governor Inslee in and out for that final speech.
Wow, this, a 7th District escort. Nice.
I didn't request it. But yes, as soon as he was done with his speech, he just went running off the stage, and Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck had to comment by name that we didn't escort him out. But he did clarify with the next day when Ferguson was in that asked him, don't be like Inslee, wait for your escort.
Well, and really what we understood is the Lieutenant Governor was trying to get him back so we could actually, you know, ceremonially, be with him as he exits, and it was just kind of bizarre.
We should let people back home know that the first week there's a lot of pomp and circumstance, you know, especially with the new governor this year. So you have the outgoing governor giving a speech, you have the new governor giving his inaugural speech, swearing in. Both of you were sworn in. Well, Senator Short, were you sworn in again this
year? Nope.
This wasn't your year.
No, this isn't my year.
It's your year to relax. But you both were sworn in. That, you know, especially for new members, that's kind of an emotional time, isn't it? I mean, a lot of times you have your family there. You're starting this brand new thing that the people of the 7th District are putting their trust in you. I mean, what was going through your minds as you were sworn in?
Yeah, it was really an incredible experience. And my parents were here from Colville, my uncle from Tacoma, and some friends. And yeah, just thinking about all the months of work to get here and a little bit of this weight, right, that the people expect me to come get something done and make a difference here in Olympia, and it's my prayer that I will be able to fulfill those wishes that people sent me here with.
Representative Abel?
Yeah, it's definitely a meaningful moment. So just a bit of clarification, both Andrew and I had the opportunity to sign the oaths of office back in the district. Andrew was in Colville. I did mine in Republic, and we had a good crowd there. In Republic to watch and see me take that oath from Judge Monasmith. It was really meaningful to me that a lot of those same folks also came over to Olympia for the legislature convening last week. And I kind of joked that half of Inchalium was in the gallery. And I'll tell you, it was incredibly meaningful when I walked into the chamber and all of a sudden I heard this roar directly over my head. And it was folks from back home just giving me a big cheer. And, you know, a giant grin on my face waved up to the gallery, and I had a cousin who snapped a picture of it. It's a pretty great photo. So very meaningful, very, very honoring and humbling.
Oh, it's great that you had so many people. That's not an easy commute.
Yeah, long ways.
Yes, absolutely. So first week of session, anything that has jumped out at you as what the big issues are going to be? I mean, Senator Short, you know, I know you're in several committees. You're also the floor leader. How are things taking shape so far?
Well, we hit the ground running. There has been no time wasted. Committee hearings are fully underway. I can just share in our Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee, the topic of the day, quite rightfully so, is the Fish and Wildlife Commission. And while I have received hundreds upon hundreds of notes from folks, we will be having a work session on that particular thing, the Ruckels House report. And it'll be Thursday. The frustrating thing is we really wanted to think about adding the public just to give some thought, maybe a former commissioner with a current commissioner. Holy cow, that lit up the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Oh, we haven't taken a position on that yet. We can't certainly do that. And, you know, I get it. They are a legitimately recognized commission. They haven't taken a position. So, unfortunately, the first go-around will just be you know, hearing about the report, and certainly people have been sharing their opinions. I expect that to be a big thing. I've had three bills heard. Well, one heard so far. Two are being heard today, one on deer and elk damage and one on indirect compensation for livestock owners when livestock are lost due to wolves. So it's hit the ground running. And I wish I could stay for the full program, but I actually have to get to another meeting. So you are in very good hands.
Well, thank you, Senator Short. And we'll hear from you next week as well at the same time. I want people to know that we'll do this every Monday, live from Olympia on Okanagan Country with 7th Legislative District Representative, State Senator Shelley Short, and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. And Representatives Engel and Abel and Engel will stay with us here as we lose Senator Short. But, you know, for the two of you, you're new legislators. So what's the first week been like?
Well, it's certainly a steep learning curve. I think at this point in the week compared to last week, we now know our way around the buildings mostly. I still get a little bit lost in the legislative building.
I've been here 6 years and or 7 years, I get lost in the legislative building.
Okay, well, that makes me feel better, but at least starting to know the way around, starting to get used to the cadence of the appointments and the committee hearings and the process of trying to move the ball forward. I believe we both got our first bills introduced, which were both wolf bills. Which is incredibly important to the district. You know, on the questions of, you know, what really seems to be the big issues that we're facing, pretty much every meeting I attend, it's discussions about the budget. Mm-hmm, we've got this massive budget shortfall that, you know, from our perspective is a problem created by the majority party here in Olympia. We certainly want to try to be part of the discussion in solving it. But with a $10 billion budget deficit, this is going to be driving a lot of the discussions that we end up having over here in Olympia this session.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt for just a second and let people know, when we talk about the majority party, the minority party, so Democrats are in the majority and Republicans are in the minority in Olympia. So when you hear those terms, that's what that means. So basically think majority Democrats, minority Republicans. Representative Engel, what's jumped out at you?
Well, I started kind of with a bang, I guess. So far, one of the more controversial bills is on rent control.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm on the Housing Committee, and that was the first hearing immediately after swearing in, and the opening ceremonies went over time by 45 minutes, which ate into half of that committee. And well over 100 people had came to testify and make their voice heard on that bill, and they were, of course, cut off because there wasn't adequate time. And so I'm told that's not normal for your first hearing or for hearings in general, but I didn't know anything different.
To kick things off with such a big, that is rare to have such a controversial bill first week of the session. So, I mean, what were you hearing from people on rent control?
There's a lot of concern. I even talked with the local Rural Resources Community Action Housing Division Manager, and he's concerned about it as well. He said he's seen just the last few years with increases in landlord restrictions, a lot of landlords that used to work with them to get homeless or low-income people placed in housing now refuse to work with them at all. And he says because what he sees as a direct result of these increased regulations on landlords, which were designed to help that population, he sees that population is being harmed by them. And so he feels that rent control would be another step in the wrong direction, and I agree with him. I have some people may know I have 12 low-income rental units myself. And I know I have relationships with my tenants and I care about them. I don't typically raise rent. I don't know that I've ever raised rent more than the 7% cap this would put in. But to some degree, when you don't have rent control, like we have now, you have this option of, you can see that they're struggling. It's not the time. And in the some of my units are well under market rate, but I can let that go knowing that I can raise it later when the time comes, or when it comes time to do upgrades, I can talk to them. And if they're able to increase the rent, I can put some new carpet in, things like that, and raise the rent at that time. So this would really strip landlords of that opportunity. And I think it's the wrong direction. I'm concerned about it actually hurting the tenants just as much as, if not more, than the landlords.
It's interesting to me, this issue. I think there's this perception out there among some people that all landlords are evil. I mean, you know, I've had landlords in my life, and none of them have been evil. They've been fair for the most part. You know, there have been times when, you know, maybe I've struggled a little bit and rent was late and they worked with me. And, you know, you think that's part of the problem out there? There's just this kind of narrative that, oh, landlords are all out there to get you.
I think that is part of it. And I will say that there are some bad landlords.
Sure.
And especially when you're dealing with some of the low income population, honestly, they are often a difficult population to work with as a landlord. And so sometimes the landlords who are better at, I guess you could say, getting the rent from them aren't always the nicest people. I've had heard some horrible stories from tenants about former landlords they've had. But the problem is those landlords are mostly already breaking the law. More regulations aren't going to change them. What I see happening is when more regulations go into effect to try to address bad landlords, it's a lot of times the good mom-and-pop landlords that end up throwing up their hands and saying, I give up. They're too worried about losing something, and they sell. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when they sell these oftentimes single-family homes in rural areas, if someone from the west side of the state or California ends up buying it, moving in, and displacing the tenant, and it really has played a role in increasing our homeless population, at least in Northeast Washington.
You know, housing is such a big issue, right? I mean, it for the governor, it's a big issue. For Republicans, it's a big issue. For Democrats, it's bipartisan. There's bipartisan concern about housing. You know, I'm from the west side of the state. Your issues must be in the 7th District totally different than, you know, what the issues here in Thurston County, where I live, or in King Pierce County, you know, Central Puget Sound. You know, I mean, talk a little bit about that. What are the housing issues for your constituents?
Yeah, that's a great question. And obviously, I don't know what your issues are. And it's something I look forward to learning on the housing committee is what are the urban issues and how can we find policy solutions that can work on both sides of the divide of the Cascades? But what I see is a lot of times it's locations to build. So we have a shortage of developable lots. The Growth Management Act, you know, had this intention of reducing urban sprawl. I would contend that in Eastern Washington, largely it's been ineffective, and I would say even increased the urban sprawl, because you arbitrarily put in zoning that says, you know, 5-acre, 10-acre, 20-acre parcels. Well, now you have a 100-acre farm. If you're in a 5-acre zoning, that's 20 home sites. Whereas in a more natural environment, you could take and do a cluster of, you know, 1-2-acre lots, 2-3 miles from town, which is what most people want in a rural area. People don't typically move out to, you know, Northeast Washington so they can live in a city. They want to have a little piece of land, but most of them don't want 5 acres. And so what we've seen is people are now checkerboarding the landscape in somewhat of an unnatural way. Now, part of the thing is, like, growth management does allow cluster developments and some of these sorts of tools to address that issue, but it's so complicated that very rarely are those tools used. And so we have a shortage of building sites. We also have what you find is the rural counties and cities often don't have the experts on staff to know how to navigate these complex processes in the Growth Management Act and things like that. So their natural inclination is just to say no to developers, and it results in less housing. So, and actually you'll find very few of the larger scale developers will come to these rural counties at all. Mm. They're putting all their housing in Spokane County, where there's experts that can help them figure out how to deal with this. And most of our development is happening one house at a time, independent contractors, which is great, right? It helps the economy. But the problem is we have a severe housing shortage and it's not getting addressed.
Representative Abel, you have thoughts on housing?
Yeah, a few additional thoughts. So I certainly echo Andrew's comments about the issue with developable land. You know, in Ferry County, approximately 90% of the land is not on the tax rolls, given that so much of the county is either on the reservation or with the Colville National Forest. So we have a problem with available land. That's increasingly a problem throughout the West as more land is taken off of the options for development. You know, one thing I would say that we share with other parts of the state, but in some ways it's a little bit exacerbated in our area, is, you know, once again, interest rates are really high for people to buy houses. And I saw just a couple of days ago that, you know, once more interest rates are over 7%. And so we have, and, you know, for years now, a lot of young folks who want to get launched with their lives and get their starter house going and, you know, have children and begin to have the kind of grown-up lives that they want to have, and they just can't. And so they're living at home, or they're, you know, making do with, they're continuing to rent or do whatever it might be. But we've got some folks who are really delayed in kind of getting their lives started and having the homes that they want, start climbing that ladder of opportunity with home ownership. And so that's a problem. I view this squarely as a problem and a creation from the administration's now leaving in Washington, D.C. with these, you know, the just incredible amount of money that flooded the system and created inflation and drove interest rates, you know, much higher. But we're continuing to see it now years later. And that's a problem that we face in the 7th District.
What other issues are on your minds right now as the session starts to settle in a little bit? Might we start with you, Representative Abel? What are some of your kind of top priorities this session?
Yeah, no, great question. So my priorities are wolves, cops, taxes, and freedom is really what I put them into four buckets. I mentioned before that both Representative Engel and I have dropped our first bills. They were both wolf bills. And this is so important out in the 7th. We've got an extraordinary number of wolves out in the area. They are continuing to cause problems not only for livestock, but also people's pets, you know, horses, goats, you know, sheep, dogs, that sort of thing. And so I've introduced a bill that would provide for incremental localized management of the wolves based on certain thresholds being met. This is an idea that was carried over from my predecessor, Representative Joel Kretz, who ably represented this district for many years in Olympia. So I'm excited about that bill. It's got some bipartisan support, so I'm hopeful it will have some traction here with the legislature. I'll be pushing hard on that. Law enforcement is a huge issue. So one of the brighter spots of the governor's inaugural was he specifically said that he looks forward to working with Senator Holey from Spokane and his bill to hire more law enforcement to the tune of $100 million. So this would be a significant investment in law enforcement. Washington State, unfortunately, ranks last in the country for a per capita number of uniformed police officers. So I was very pleased to introduce the House companion bill to Senator Holey's $100 million bill to hire more cops. And I'm hopeful that that's going to get a significant amount of support in this session, particularly given that the governor has more or less said that he looks forward to signing some version of that bill. So very pleased to submit and file the House version of that bill.
Yeah, it was interesting. He said he won't sign a budget without that without that bill included. So.
Yeah, he laid down a marker on that. And so that is, again, a pleasant surprise. We're pleased to see that. I think there are some different ways about how we can get there. But, you know, I want to hire more cops. Mm-hmm. And I think Senator Holey's bill is the best way to do that. So I look forward to moving forward on that. I mentioned taxes. So I serve on the Finance Committee. So that's the Tax Writing Committee. And, you know, the majority party, you were talking before, that the majority party are the Democrats, the minority party are the Republicans, but the majority party is still continuing to talk about potential tax increases. I will be opposing that every step along the way. And then lastly, I mentioned, you know, freedom. You know, our district is pretty conservative. We take the Constitution seriously out here in the 7th. Tomorrow in the Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee, we will be hearing a series of, from my perspective, bad gun bills, bad Second Amendment bills. So these are items that if people have thoughts or feelings on, I encourage them to reach out and let my office know and Representative Engel and Senator Short as well. But there are a series of bills all designed from my perspective to reduce our Second Amendment rights, and I'll be opposing them. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking about and talking about as this session continues to unfold.
Representative Engel?
Yeah, similar to Representative Abel, I agree with all the things he said, but also, so affordability, the high cost of living, that was the number one thing I heard on the campaign, that's people are struggling to make ends meet. And so, you know, my approach to that, we need to look at cutting regulations that aren't serving a clear benefit to the people. There's a lot of regulations, obviously, that are necessary. We need to keep people safe. But sometimes in the pursuing of reducing risk, we add a whole other set of burdens that don't serve to outweigh the cost. And so I'm constantly looking at how can we cut regulations that might make things more affordable. One small thing I'm working on is is removing the requirement to have an operator, paid operator, managing Group B water systems. And this doesn't apply to most people, but it's just an example. Group B water systems are from 3 to 14 homes sharing a well. The state's already put very minimal regulations on those, but currently required to pay a certified operator that doesn't really do anything that is critical. And it's just a cost that those people on those systems have to bear. And so I think the Department of Health is open to getting rid of that. So that's something I'm working on. Cutting unfair taxes or reducing those, that's another priority. So supporting agriculture and natural resource economies, that's really important. And our district covers over 20% of the state. So we have a large portion of the agriculture, natural resource, forestry, mining in our state. And I want to make sure I'm supporting those. And I'm honored to be the assistant ranking on the Agriculture Natural Resource Committee. So it's a good place to work on that. And just making sure that those voices of people in those industries are heard, reflected in the policies we're discussing. And obviously, protecting rights, as Representative Abel talked about, is a priority and something I look at throughout all the legislation I'm considering.
One thing I'll chime in here, Andrew won't mention it himself, but it's a pretty significant honor for a freshman to be both on the Ag Committee and assistant ranking. This is something I know that we had discussed with our leadership about the importance of trying to have somebody from the 7th in that position, and I think they recognized rightly that Andrew is a natural fit there and he's going to be doing great things on the Ag Committee.
Much more coming up with our representatives from the 7th Legislative District, Representative Andrew Engel and Representative Hunter Abel on Okanagan Country Radio. This is Live from Olympia. I'm Tracy Ellis. We'll be back. It's Live from Olympia on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. And with me, 7th Legislative District Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter Abel. And, you know, it is always interesting to me for new legislators, especially from the other side of the mountains. You have to relocate for just this, 4-month period. You have to find a place to live. You have to get you're both freshmen, so you had to get your offices settled. You had to meet everybody. I mean, it is just, it's kind of a whirlwind, isn't it? I mean, talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the issues a little bit more here in just a sec. But I'm interested in just seeing how has that gone for you?
Well, it is a tremendous whirlwind. It's not only a whirlwind for the legislators, but also for our family members. So I've got two little girls, ages 9 and 11. And one of the things that I tried to do in conjunction with Andrew and his family is we tried to acclimate the kids to the legislative building by doing a treasure hunt around the building where they would start at some of the statues located in the foyer, Marcus Whitman and I'm forgetting that Mother Joseph, yeah, and then to the Great Seal and then to all kind of places around the building. So they got a chance to make the building a little bit their own, and also it was a chance opportunity for us to remind them this is a special place, but it's also their place, and that it's our hope that they come there often. Something else that was meaningful, certainly for me, was the process of finding kind of a home away from home church while I'm here. Mm-hmm. So, back in the district, I attend, I'm a member of Inchleam Community Church, where our family's worshiped for a long time, great Bible-believing, little small country church. And Andrew and I had discussed, about some local churches over here in Olympia. We did get a chance to go worship. Andrew and his family were gracious. They moved over on their pew a little bit and let me sit with them yesterday. But we had an encounter from back home. Do you want to fill in about that, Andrew?
Yeah. It's one important thing. I brought my wife and my 4 children with me here for session, and we're trying to get them plugged in somewhere so that while I'm busy, they can have friends and do things. And so yesterday we went last week to the Westwood Baptist Church, and it's always a little hard to plug into a new place. There's, several hundred people there. And so we go sit down and turn around to the people behind me, just introduce myself, and he gave his name, and I said, "So you've been coming here long?" And he said, "No, it's my first week." And I said,
"It's your first week too, right?"
Yeah, right. I said, "My first week too." I'm like, "How long have you been in Olympia?" He said, "Oh, off and on for 15 years." And how about you? I'm like, "Oh, I'm actually just moved here from Colville." He goes, "Really? My parents are from Colville," and they're sitting right next to him, right behind me. And sure enough, they were visiting their son, and it was pretty amazing. So Robert and Christy Mayer from Colville. She was a longtime school teacher. I didn't know them myself, but we had a lot of friends in common. And it just feels great when you're over here in a little bit of a foreign place to meet someone with friends in common who lives just a couple miles from where we live and get a little taste of home away from home.
Oh, yeah. It makes you feel, I mean, all of a sudden you have a sense of belonging, right? I mean, you're brand new to this church. It's a pretty big church, too. You know, that the one that you went to. And, you know, it's nice. It's just, you know, it's the old saying, mysterious ways, right?
That's
it's just
right.
That happened. You know, you were there, too, Representative Abel, too.
Yeah, I'm still smiling about it because what a great little, you know, in a way, kind of a divine appointment there, a chance to see some people from home. And it was neat. They knew my folks.
They
didn't personally know me, but they knew my parents. Everybody knows my parents. You know? So that was fun. But just a great way to, you know, start off a Sunday with talking with a couple of people from back home.
Yeah. You know, speaking of back home, big issue for people in your district, I know, just working with Senator Short through the years here, is a Second Amendment. You mentioned it, Representative Abel, earlier. But, you know, and we also talked about taxes earlier. I mean, there's actually one Democrat bill that does both things. It threatens Second Amendment rights, and it looks to raise taxes at the same time. I mean, that's kind of where some Democrats, not all, but some Democrats here in the legislature, I think that's kind of where they're coming from, right? Talk about that one particular bill I just mentioned.
Well, I'm going to talk about a grab bag of bills here because
sure.
I think they're all bad.
Okay.
I'll just cut straight to the chase. I think they're all bad. And I really think where it comes from is that there is a perception among our Democrat colleagues across the aisle that the Second Amendment is really a disfavored right under our Constitution. I think that's wrong. I think the Second Amendment rights need to be protected. I think I would like to see them enhanced. But we are facing a slew of bills coming through my committee tomorrow. And I do want to, point this out and highlight this for our listeners because I think these are bad bills. I'm going to do some letters and numbers here for people who are listening. It's House Bills 1163. 1152, 1132, and 1118. And 1163 is introduced by Representative Barry. It would establish permitting requirements for the transfer of related to the purchase and the transfer of firearms. 1152 is Representative Dolio's bill pertaining to secure storage requirements for firearms. HB 1132 is Representative Farivar's bill pertaining to bulk purchases or what are described as bulk purchases of firearms. And then House Bill 1118 is introduced by Representative Simmons pertaining to restoration of firearm rights to certain categories of individuals. These are all, from my perspective, bad bills. They're designed to erode our Second Amendment rights. I have significant concerns about them. So I would encourage our listeners to look into these bills and let us know their thoughts and feedback.
We should also emphasize here that when it comes to gun crime, Republicans, from my experience, has been they want to be tough on gun crime. I mean, it is interesting to me. I think sometimes people think, you're all about defending the Second Amendment. What about gun crime? Completely different issues, right? I mean, from your standpoint.
Yeah, they are two completely different issues, right? I mean, the vast majority of, firearm owners are responsible firearm owners. They take their Second Amendment rights, seriously. There are criminal elements in society who engage in gun crimes, and, criminals need to be punished. We're the law and order party.
All right. It's interesting. We were talking about new taxes, and House Bill 1386 actually proposes 11% tax on firearms and parts, rather, and ammo, I believe, as well. And, here's really the two things that we were discussing earlier, taxes and Second Amendment. This one kind of hits both of them, right? I mean, why a tax on this particular product all of a sudden,
Yeah, I think the answer is clear. It's because, again, for certain members of the legislature, the Second Amendment is a disfavored right. They would rather see it taxed or regulated, out of existence than to have it continue to be protected activity. I'm glad you mentioned that bill. I am aware of that bill. It's not immediately in front of the committee, but it's going to be coming before my committee. So, yeah, that's another bad bill to be aware of.
let's just kind of talk a little bit more about taxes, because Democrats, before the session started, there was an email from a state senator, a Democratic state senator, that really outlined a slew of different tax increases that they are going to be considering this year. It talked about how Democrats should talk about these increases. One of the things in there was labeling some of the people who will pay these taxes as villains, really. You know, the governor, it sounds like what he has said is that tax increases are a last resort, and he's wants to look at the budget and scrub it wherever he can and do, you know, some spending cuts. I know that's the favorite approach from Republicans as well. But, you know, talk about that. Did you guys see that email that came out from that senator?
I did. I think this email is a really interesting story, and I'm glad you mentioned it. So this is the dangers of autofill and reply all. This yes. email was not intended for a broader audience.
Right.
It was internal talking points by the Democrat Senate majority. Really from a working session about how to raise taxes on the people of Washington. And you're exactly right. It identified among their strategies as identifying the villain, which really rubs me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. We're talking about taxpayers in this state. I know they're not villains. They're hardworking people. But this email was not intended to be sent out to a broader audience, but it was sent out as a result of, I think, an errant autofill function. And it really kind of gave away, at least on the legislative side, the Democrats' game plan for raising taxes. Now, the interesting dynamic is you just mentioned that the governor's inaugural indicated that Governor Ferguson will be looking at taxes as a last resort. I will not be supporting a tax increase. I will be doing everything I can to work with colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle and colleagues on the other side of the aisle to find efficiencies and savings in our state budget. And I look forward to being a value-added participant in those discussions. But I think in many ways, this email from Senator Frame's office kind of gave away their game plan about coming after the pocketbooks of people here in Washington.
Ken, so for people at home listening, they may not realize that there's a budget shortfall projected. The numbers vary depending on who's talking about them, from $6 billion over 4 years to more than $12 billion over 4 years. Let's just even say it's the low number, $6 billion. I mean, that means something's got to be done, right? I mean, right now, the way things are going, there won't be enough money to pay all the bills, so you got to do something. You know, my wife and I go through this process every once in a while. It's painful, and it's like, I really don't want to cut out my coffees. I like my coffees. But, you know, I mean, what's more important, coffee or, you know, rent, right? It's like, so we go through this as families, right? I mean, is it really a similar process? You know, I mean, do you think we could find this money that needs to be cut out without really with coffees rather than with, schools, for example?
Absolutely. I'm actually reminded of one of my favorite statements from a great book by Brian Tracy called Eat That Frog, which is about time management. And in there he says that you'll never have enough time for all the things you want to do, all the books you want to read, the vacations you want to take. There will never be enough time for all the things you want to do, but there will always be enough time for the most important things. And the goal is to figure out what those most important things are and focus your time on those. And it's the same with money. It's the same with money in your life and my life. And it needs to be the same way in the government's life, that we need to figure out what the priorities are, which I think are pretty clear. You know, our Constitution lays it out. We need a government that protects people's rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness, schools, the infrastructure. And we need to prioritize those things and fund those first and then divvy up what money's left amongst the other things. It really isn't that complicated.
Why does it seem so complicated then? I mean, your Representative Abel, you're on the committee that deals with this stuff. I mean, It certainly seems a lot more complicated than Representative Engel has made it sound.
Well, the politics play a role, right? I mean, the state budget is a product of a lot of political considerations, and everybody's got a vested interest in trying to ensure that their program or their idea is funded or expanded. It's also the nature of government. Government wants to expand. I mean, Andrew and I are conservatives. We want to restrain, limit, reduce the size of government, because where government expands, civil society recedes. I'm interested in seeing civil society, the private sector, the churches, our communities step up and do a lot of these functions, and I believe that they'll do them a lot better than the government. So I recognize that we're in the minority here in Olympia, but we get the right of debate. We get the right of amendment. We're going to argue to the majority that there are better ways to run our state government. And I think here's really sort of an analogy is, you know, if Andrew's family or my family decided last year that we're going to take a first-class trip to Paris, remodel the bathroom, and buy a sports car, and then it's this new year, and we decide we want to take the first-class trip to Paris, remodel the bathroom again, and buy another sports car, and say the money's not there to do it again. Well, then that's kind of what we have here with the budget with that the Democrats have built in Olympia. They've spent significantly over the last number of years, and they've built a budget that's just not sustainable. You know, it's really time to be prioritizing what the core responsibilities of government are. Put the funds appropriately toward that. From my perspective, it's law enforcement. It is ensuring safe, quality public schools, among other things. But we've just built a budget that's not sustainable. We have been arguing for some time that this is not a revenue problem. This is a spending problem. And the size and the amount of the spending that our state government has done has roughly doubled over the course of the last 15 years. And I don't believe that the quality of government services we've received has doubled in quality. So,
talking with Representatives Hunter Abel and Andrew Engel from the 7th Legislative District on Live from Olympia on Okanagan Country Radio. If you have a question, you can phone it into the station. I'll make sure we get it, 509-826-0100. You can email me directly, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, dot Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, at leg.wa.gov. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it's something that's celebrated every year on both the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate. You guys have any thoughts on that?
I do. So I'm very honored. I'll be one of the three House Republicans who will be giving some remarks on the floor in honor of Martin Luther King Day. And, it's an important day for all of us. It was an opportunity for me to sort of reexamine his life and legacy in light of, where we are as a state, where we are as a country. I will be talking about his legacy of justice and equality and his enduring sense of optimism about this country. He didn't give up on this idea of America. He was relentlessly optimistic that we would be a freer country at the end of his efforts. So that's something that I'll be talking about on the floor. I'll also be talking a little bit about my own family's story. So I live on the Colville Reservation. We're non-member residents of the Colville Reservation, been there a long time, and we choose to live there, and we're happy that we live there. And I think in its own very small, humble way, it's the local community there is living out Dr. King's vision of a free, equal, and optimistic society.
Anything to add?
I'll just say I've always been inspired by Martin Luther King Jr. and his belief that all people are equal, created by God, equal and deserving of respect and dignity. And it's just something that we need to continue to remember. And today is a great day to do that. And I'm looking forward to hearing Representative Abel's speech. I'm sure it's going to be incredible.
You just heard it.
A sneak preview here, and you heard it first. Yeah. Live from Olympia.
Yeah, one thing I'll tag on to there, though, is I have, again, spent a little bit of time over the last week rereading some of Dr. King's writings and just how tremendously his deep Christian faith impacted him and influenced him in how he approached the civil rights movement. I was aware of that, of course, in high school, but it's a good reminder for me as I think about, how do we make effective, meaningful, genuine change in the public sector.
And there was a really interesting documentary on PBS called The Black Church, and it touched on a big portion of it was that part of Dr. King that sometimes gets overlooked, mm-hmm. I mean, it was Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Yes. People sometimes forget that, it's interesting you brought that up. All right, so what's ahead this week? What are some things that, the people back home might be interested in? And we want people to know that you, even though you're way back there, can be here in Olympia for hearings. Yes, you can. You can testify in hearings. We allow remote testimony. Go to leg.wa.gov, legwa.gov to learn how. But there is, people can testify remotely. So just because you're in Colville or Republic, OMAC, doesn't mean you can't participate in hearings here in Olympia. Anyway, are there hearings here that you guys are aware of that people might want to participate in?
There are. That rent control hearing that we referred to in the House, of course, the hearing's done in the House, but the Senate is hearing it this week. The House, in my committee, will be having executive action on that bill to send it to the floor, and I guess we'll find out, but we are leaning toward thinking that it's going to pass the committee. I know at least one Democrat on the committee is going to vote against it, he told me, but I think they have enough members that they can still get it done.
Yeah, we should let people know the process. So a bill comes to committee, it's heard, and then the committee members vote on whether to send it to the floor or not. Just like everything else in the legislature, the Democrats have the majority in these committees. So that's why you hear Representative Ingalls say they're probably going to send it to the floor because the Democrats will do that.
Right.
But probably every Republican will vote against it, likely.
Correct.
Right.
Well, and what I'll tell you, one thing I've enjoyed already is when I'm in a committee hearing, I can look at all the people who have signed in favor or opposed to the bill and people who have submitted written testimony. I love reading those, especially if there's anyone from the district. I know on that rent control hearing, I read Kit Arbuckle, I think was maybe the only one from our district, but he's from Okanagan County, and he wrote testimony opposing that bill. And it's really encouraging to me to see people from our district getting involved, making their voice heard. And so you don't have to come to Olympia and testify in person to make a difference and to write a great story. I know Kit's story was incredible as a landlord himself. He explained why this would be a problem. And I think I would highly encourage people to do that. Reach out to me directly, but also to comment on those bills.
And we should let you know also that your representatives and senators don't mind if you don't agree with them. You know that, so if you heard them talking about being against rent control and you're in favor of that bill, that's okay. They still want to hear from you. You know, I know this because members have told me this time and time again. It's, yeah, we have a position, but you guys represent all of the people, right? So you want to hear from everybody, right?
And I want to have those hard conversations. Right. So if you disagree with something I'm working on, by all means, if you've got a good story and a good reason why you think I should consider something else, I want to talk to you.
Yeah, do you feel like Representative Abel, these things, I mean, it shouldn't be written in stone, right? That's the whole point of the process. You debate, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we engage in debate. We hear from our constituents back home. You know, it really is striking for me, being a first-term legislator over here, to realize that so many of our legislators live within, 90 minutes of the Capitol building?
Yeah, right.
You know, whereas for me and Andrew, it's, a 700-mile round trip driving back and forth. But it's further for people who come over here from, Ponderay County or, something along those lines. So, if we have listeners who come to Olympia, even if they're just driving through, I'd just really encourage you to swing on by. We would be thrilled to see you agree with us or disagree with us. We would just be really pleased, very, very pleased to talk with people from back home. One other thing I would put on just kind of people's radar, we've got another item this week. You mentioned that last week was a lot of pomp and circumstance. We heard the outgoing governor's State of the State address. We heard the incoming governor's inaugural address. We also have the State of the Judiciary address this week from a new Chief Justice, Chief Justice Stevens. For those who may not be aware, professionally, my background is I'm an attorney. I'm a constitutionally conservative attorney. And so I'll be listening very carefully to hear what the Chief Justice has to say about the state of our courts here in Washington. Because
there are some issues with our courts.
There are some issues with our courts. And again, it goes back to a budget discussion that we had here. One of the major issues that we're facing is a lack of rural public defenders, as well as, frankly, rural prosecutors. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. But again, we're the law and order party, which means the courts have to work fairly and effectively. And so I'll be listening to hear what the Chief Justice has to say about that and the state of the courts.
Interesting. For people back home who may not know your backgrounds, they probably do at this point, but let's just briefly remind people again, since this is only the second show. What's your background, Representative Engel?
So my background is quite varied, but just in a nutshell, I grew up, my dad was a contractor, still is actually in Colville. So I grew up working for him summertime as a kid and then up into my early 20s, worked for another contractor building houses. I was actually worked at a couple of dairy farms as a milker for a while. I was a welder at Hughes Craft, a boat company in Colville. Then I went on after the Great Recession in 2008 to become an organic vegetable farmer with my wife. That was our primary source of income for 6 years. Federal regulations put us out of business. I complained to our member of Congress who hired me, and I got to work for her the last 8 years.
That's interesting. Now, we're going to forgive the fact that Representative Abel is a lawyer, but what's your background?
Yeah, Representative Engel solves problems. I create the problems. So my background, I was born in Colville, and I was raised in Inchillium over in Ferry County, which is where I live now, raised on the family ranch there, Long Rifle Ranch, which is established by my grandparents. Graduated from Inchillium, went off to college, went off to law school, and joined the Navy in the time following 9/11. Did a number of years in the Navy, was a Navy JAG Corps officer, and I'm still a reservist in the Navy. I'm a commander in the U.S. Navy Reserve. Been practicing law now for about 20 years. I take our Constitution seriously, and I live back on the family ranch. We're trying to take it forward to the next generation, primarily timber, some hay, and but you know, it makes some money. It's a beautiful place to live. Wouldn't trade it for anything.
You know, and people, I'm from Shelton, which is a rural place here in Western Washington. When you're from rural parts of the state, it is a little bit challenging sometimes to, you know, I mean, go out there and have the success that both of you obviously have had. And, you know, it just is a testament to, you know, to your hard work and to your families as well. You know, it was obviously, I find that most people who come into it with some passion, that passion usually comes from family. Anyway, we are out of time. I hate the fact that I had to have the last word there. I apologize. This is Live from Olympia, and I'm Tracy Ellis with 7th Legislative District Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter Abel.